Hi, this is Glenn Rawson. One of the most powerful ways to share history and heritage is by the telling of stories. We began sharing inspiring stories nearly 30 years ago. Each of those stories is true and was intended to inspire and strengthen faith. Over the years, those stories have reached millions around the world. This podcast is for you to listen, learn, and enjoy. My friends, welcome tonight. Thank you for joining me. Now, tonight, I don't recall that I've ever spoken to this theme before. It's those who knew Brother Joseph. Let me explain that rather unique title. First of all, these are those who met Joseph Smith personally. Secondly, why the title Brother Joseph? Because for the most part, in the days of the prophet Joseph Smith, some called him President Smith, but most referred to him as Brother Joseph. And you'll see why. That carried forward into the administration of Brigham Young. But once the church got so big, it was no longer Brother John or Brother Wilford, it was President Taylor and President Woodruff. But in those early days, the church was small enough that practically everyone that came to Nauvoo or Kirtland knew Joseph Smith personally. Now, why does it matter? Why would anyone give a pinch of snuff to know anything about Joseph Smith as a man? I've talked about his prophetic calling, and I will do so again. But tonight, we're talking about Joseph Smith, the man. Why would that matter? I think it matters a great deal, and I'll tell you why. When the angel came to Moroni, he said that his name would be had for good and ill among all kindreds, nations, and tongues. The meaning of that is that people would either love him or hate him across the generations on both sides of the veil. Now, I've lived long enough, been involved with Joseph long enough to know that is true. There's never been a time in the history of this world when more people loved the prophet Joseph Smith and more people hated him, and he had more enemies than right now. And among those, there are a lot of things going out there accusing Joseph of all manner of abominations, sinful acts, and faults in character. We are drowning in accusations against the prophet Joseph Smith. Therefore, you can't see it. But if you really wanted to know, if you really wanted to know what kind of a man I am, and I hope you don't, you could go right behind me up on these shelves, way up high, about 12 or 13 feet up, are all of my journals dating back to 1977. If you really wanted to know what was in my heart, read my journals, read my letters. That failing, if you really wanted to know me, talk to those who know me best. They would tell you. And again, I hope you don't. There's not much here to discover. Same thing with the prophet Joseph Smith. We have access to his journals. We don't need people on the internet telling us what Joseph said, or what Joseph did, or what kind of a man Joseph was. We can read his journals, it's right there. That failing, if you don't have access to the internet, and who doesn't, you can talk to those who knew him personally, some who liked him and some who didn't, and find out what they said of him. That's what I'm going to do tonight. We're going to talk to those or listen to those who knew Joseph, and some liked him, some didn't. The first story, and I think this is significant, is Jane James. See, Jane James and a small group of other free blacks left New England and came to Nauvoo after joining the church. They were denied passage on a boat to cross the lakes and wound up having to walk several hundred miles to reach Nauvoo. By the time they did, their clothes were ragged and their feet were wrapped in worse. They were barefoot, no shoes. When they arrived in Nauvoo, they came up to the door of the mansion house. And that's where I want to begin telling you the story. She said that as they approached the mansion house, Emma was the first one to see them. And as she saw them coming, she greeted them and said, "Come in, come in, come in." And she invited them in. And a moment or two later, the prophet Joseph Smith came down the stairs. They sat down. Joseph greeted all of them warmly. And then the prophet Joseph then asked Jane to share the story of what they had been through to reach Nauvoo. As she began to share their difficulties, Joseph listened attentively, and then he said, speaking to Dr. Bernheisel, "What do you think of that, doctor? Isn't that faith?" "Well, I rather think it is," was Dr. Bernheisel's reply. "If it had been me, I fear I should have backed out and returned to my home." Then the prophet Joseph said to them, to the Manning family, "God bless you. You are among friends. Now you will be protected." Then Joseph and Emma opened up the mansion house. Some of you know this story better than I do. Opened up the mansion house and invited them to stay until they could obtain employment and places to live. Within a week, all of the people who had traveled to Nauvoo with Jane had found homes and jobs, with the exception of Jane. On the morning that all of Jane's family left the Smiths for their new jobs, the prophet Joseph came in to say his usual good morning to her. He found Jane weeping and inquired as to the cause of the tears. And she said, "The folks have all gone and got themselves homes, and I have got none." "Yes, you have," he said. "You have a home right here if you want it. You mustn't cry. We dry up all tears here." He left the room and returned shortly with Emma. "Sister Emma," he said, "here is a girl that says she has no home. Haven't you a home for her?" Emma offered Jane the same warm hospitality she had given scores of others in similar need. Satisfied that the tears were over, Joseph left Jane and Emma to work out the details, and Jane stayed and worked, not as a slave, not as a servant, but as a friend and a guest. She stayed there for several months. Jane would leave the following description of the prophet Joseph Smith. She said, "Yes, indeed, I guess I did know the prophet Joseph, that lovely hand. He used to put it out to me, never passed me without shaking hands with me wherever he was. Oh, he was the finest man I ever saw. I did not get much of a chance to talk with him. He'd always smile, just like he did to his children. When they first arrived in Nauvoo, Jane says, there was eight of us, my mother and two sisters, a brother and a sister-in-law, and we had two children. One of them we had to carry all the way there. And then I told you about it. Emma said, walk in, come in, all of you. And then Joseph came down. I told you about that. She said, after I saw him," meaning Joseph, "after I saw him plain, I was certain he was a prophet, because I knew it. I was willing to come and gather, and when he came in with Dr. Bernheisel, I knew him. Did not have to tell me, because I knew him. I knew him when I saw him back in old Connecticut in a vision, saw him plain, and knew he was a prophet." Jane would go on to describe, quote, the desolation she felt at his death when she said, quote, "When he was killed, I like to have died myself," end of quote. Jane Manning James would remain true to that testimony of the prophet Joseph for the rest of her days. Now, those who want to call Joseph narrow-minded, bigoted, I don't find that in the record anywhere. This next one. Emmeline B. Wells was born February 28, 1829, in Massachusetts. She was the seventh child in her family. Her father died when she was 4 years of age. Emmeline grew up with an independent, strong spirit taught and nurtured by her mother. In 1842, her family joined the church. They immigrated to Nauvoo, where at the age of 15, Emmeline got married. She wasn't married very long when her husband left her, and her life took an interesting turn from there. But I want to describe to you that moment as she is coming up the river, up the Mississippi, towards Nauvoo. She was having a conversation with a woman on the boat who knew the prophet Joseph Smith, I think a sister named Davies, who was describing Joseph and talking about Nauvoo and the saints, etc., etc. And Emmeline was building in anticipation to meet the prophet and finally gather with the saints. Now I quote from her record, she said, "At last the boat reached the upper landing, and a crowd of people were coming toward the bank of the river. As we stepped ashore, the crowd advanced, and I could see one person who towered away and above all the others around him. In fact, I did not see distinctly any others. His majestic bearing, so entirely different from anyone I had ever seen," and she said, "I had seen many superior men, was more than a surprise. It was as if I beheld a vision. I seemed to be lifted off of my feet, to be, as it were, walking in the air and paying no heed whatever to those around me. I made my way through the crowd. Then I saw this man, whom I had noticed because of his lofty appearance, shaking hands with all the people, men, women, and children. Before I was aware of it, he came to me. And when he took my hand, I was simply electrified, thrilled through and through to the tips of my fingers and every part of my body, as if some magic elixir had given me new life and vitality. I'm sure," she said, "for a few minutes, I was not conscious of motion. I think I stood still. I did not want to speak or be spoken to. I was overwhelmed with indefinable emotion. Sister Gates," that was the lady's name, "Sister Gates came to me and said, 'I'll introduce you to the prophet Joseph now. He is here.' I replied, 'I don't want to be introduced to him.' She was astonished, and she said curtly, 'Why, you told me how desirous you were of meeting him.' I answered, 'Yes, but I've seen him, and he spoke to me.' 'But he didn't know who you were,' she said. I replied, 'I know that, but it doesn't matter.' And Sister Gates walked away without another word of explanation. I was, in reality, too full for utterance. I think had I been formally presented to the prophet, I should have fallen down at his feet. I was in such a state of ecstasy. The one thought that filled my soul, 'I have seen a prophet of God. He has taken me by the hand, and this testimony has never left me. In all the perils by the way, it is as vivid today as it ever was. For many years,' she concludes, "I felt it was too sacred an experience even to mention." For the first time in my life, I think I understand what Emmeline was saying. By the witness of the Spirit of God, I know that Jesus is the Christ. And a long time ago, when I was a wild and reckless young cowboy, the thought of bowing before any man was repugnant to me. And I made the statement, "I don't care who, I don't care what, I don't care when or how, I will never bow to any man." And now, 40 years later, I know if I met the Savior, I would fall at his feet. Not because I've seen him, not because I've been introduced, but because I know what I know by the Spirit of the Lord. Similarly, if I ever have the opportunity to meet the prophet Joseph, I know by the Spirit who he is, what he is, and what he has done. And my reverence and respect, not my worship, but my reverence and respect, I can find myself overwhelmed. I understand what she means. Oh, and I forgot to mention about Emmeline B. Wells. This is the same woman I told you about who some 70, maybe 80 years later would keep the faith all that way and would meet the Savior face to face in the Salt Lake Temple. I told you that story. Which tells me, my dear friends, keep the faith, keep the covenants of the restored gospel as taught by the prophet Joseph, and you too will meet the Savior. All right, this next fellow never joined the church. He was an attorney there in Missouri. Let me tell you the story. By the way, his name is Peter Hardiman Burnett, an interesting fellow. I well remember, he said, the first time I ever saw Joseph Smith Jr. I arrived at Far West one Saturday evening in June or July of 1838 and found there John McDaniel, a young merchant of liberty. John was wild, imprudent, and fond of frolics. On Saturday, he had openly ridiculed Smith's pretensions to the gift of prophecy, and his remarks had made their way back to Joseph. On Sunday, John and myself, John McDaniel, the imprudent young man, went to hear Smith preach. The church was a large frame building with seats well arranged and a good pulpit. We were treated with great politeness and kindly shown to seats that commanded a full view of the whole proceedings. The congregation was large, very orderly, and attentive. Makes you wonder if they really were Latter-day Saints. There were officers there to show people to their seats who were most polite and efficient in the discharge of their duties. Two sermons were delivered by other preachers, which were simply plain, practical discourses and created no emotion. But when Joseph Smith Jr. rose to speak, he was full of the most intense excitement. He boldly denounced McDaniel in the most severe terms, saying in substance that no man should come to Far West and openly vilify and slander him, and that if his brethren would not protect him, he would protect himself. I had not heard of the remarks of McDaniel and was wholly taken by surprise. I watched him, meaning McDaniel, as he sat by my side, and he was as pale as a corpse, but did not stir or open his lips. The Mormon audience was deeply moved, but preserved good order. In other words, they didn't turn and give him hateful looks. Notice this. This is cool. After the services were ended, McDaniel requested me to go with him to see Smith. That takes a little bit of courage. And we did so. And then Burnett says, an explanation was made on both sides and the matter there terminated. What was Joseph Smith like? Well, I can tell you this, he was not milquetoast. He was a man of courage. He spoke his mind. Is it possible to be a bold prophet and still be meek and lowly of heart? Of course, the Savior was. Being meek and lowly of heart does not mean being a mouse. And Joseph was no mouse. Remember, it would be only a few months later, there in Far West, when an army of some 500 to 7,500 men would march on Far West. Joseph Smith would face a delegation with the white flag and say to them, backed up by only 250 members of the church, he would say to the general, go back and tell your soldiers to withdraw, or we will send you and them to hell. John Taylor, who was standing there, said, quote, I thought that was a pretty bold stand to take. Now, I didn't understand it when I was a wee lad just starting out as a Latter-day Saint, but I get a better grasp now. It takes a lot of courage, a lot of moxie, a lot of strength of character to stand against persecution. Joseph was a man of courage and would face any enemy. But, as the story illustrates, he was quick to forgive. Now, the other story, a few months later, now in April of 1839, just a few miles away in Gallatin, Missouri, Joseph Smith has been brought from Liberty Jail to the county seat of Gallatin for a hearing on whether or not he should stand trial. The defense attorney at that hearing was Alexander W. Doniphan, backed up by Peter Hardiman Burnett. And the room was full of anti-Mormons, haters of every stripe. And Burnett would later describe that as Doniphan began to speak in defense of the prophet, Burnett described that the men in the room were so angry they foamed at the mouth and gnashed their teeth. Burnett looked over the crowd and thought, any minute this is going to blow wide open. He reached down, he said, for his weapon, and whispered to Doniphan, let yourself out, my good man. In other words, speak your mind and give it to him. And the first man that blows, or the first man that lifts a gun or makes for you, I will lay down my life in your defense, meaning in the defense of the prophet Joseph Smith. Burnett never joined the church. But he remained, as it were, along with Alexander W. Doniphan, a friend of Joseph all his days. Men of character knew men of character. Burnett went on to immigrate all the way to California and became California's first elected governor in 1849. I don't have time to talk about all of them. There's way more here than I've got time to tell. But a couple of quick thoughts. Bathsheba Smith. She was the wife of George A. Smith. George A. Smith was the prophet Joseph's cousin, first cousin, and a very colorful man. I was sent a story just this week about George A. making a trip with Brigham Young, I believe it was 1869, something like that, from Salt Lake over to Bear Lake, to Paris, going up and over the mountains, and the story was absolutely hilarious. I'll share with you another time. But Bathsheba Smith was married to George A., and she describes the first time she met Joseph in 1839 at a meeting near Quincy. Joseph had just gotten out of Liberty Jail and escaped Missouri. Of her impressions concerning him, she says, quote, my first impressions were that he was an extraordinary man, a man of great penetration, was different from any other man I ever saw, had the most heavenly countenance, was genial, affable, and kind, and looked the soul of honor and integrity. That's the one right there that just makes my blood boil. All those who want to say Joseph Smith was a liar, a fraud, a charlatan, a deceiver, they do not know the record and they have not bothered to look. Everyone who knew him, even those who weren't his friends, attested to the fact that he was a man of integrity and honor and truthfulness. You can't hide your countenance. You cannot. People of discernment can look right into your soul, and again, they said he had the most heavenly, radiant countenance of light. And over again, they say he was genial, affable, and kind. He was fun. He was friendly. He was outgoing. Margaret Pierce Young said, in January of 1840, word came that the prophet Joseph Smith was going to visit our branch on his way from Philadelphia. This is when Joseph had gone back east to Washington, D.C., to meet the President of the United States and petition the government of the United States for redress in their grievances against being driven out of Missouri. While he was waiting for Congress to act, and we still are, Joseph had traveled up to New York and Pennsylvania visiting the branches of the church. Margaret Pierce Young lived up there, and she heard that Joseph was coming to visit the branch. Well, her father said, "Let us get our carriages and go to meet him." So she said, James Downing, Levi Ryder, Jacob Weiler, and father Robert Pierce brought him, Joseph, to our home. My mother served a splendid supper, and then the neighbors gathered in to hear the prophet's discourse. I wish I might describe my feelings at that meeting. Though they are fresh and green in my memory today, I must fall short of expressing myself. But so animated with loving kindness, so mild and gentle, yet big and powerful and majestic was the prophet, that to me he seemed more than a man. I thought him almost an angel. Margaret Pierce Young and her sister Mary were baptized the following day.
Thank you for listening. Many of the stories you heard today have been published and are archived at glennrossinstories.com. If you would like more information, you can communicate with us there. We will be back again with another podcast next week.